is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Woods, your host, and we're glad to have you with us today. You know, when I was in elementary school and then, of course, into junior high school, I remember going to bed one night, got down on my knees beside my bed and prayed and asked that God would make sure we would all wake up the next morning. You see, that was October 1962. In the depths of the Cuban Missile Crisis, when nuclear war seemed to be a threat that very real at that time, where the whole world could be blown apart as we were having the nuclear stand down, the threat that we had all lived under since August of 1945, when the horrors of nuclear war were unleashed on us. So it's been a fear that we've always had, and there's always been people who have been opposed to it, and quite frankly, from the religious right, which I would consider myself a part of in many respects, we always look kind of strangely on the nuclear activist as some kind of, well, somewhat of a dreamer. But what if he's not really a dreamer? What if he's a disciple? And that's why he is what he is. Well, let's talk about that day because our guest today is Tyler Wick Stevenson. He is a nuclear activist, and he has written a book called The World Is Not Ours to Save, which sounds strange right away, doesn't it? You think, why would a guy who's in a crusade, a cause, write a book that the world is not ours to save? An interesting perspective, and that's why he's our guest today on Peace Talk. Tyler, glad to have you.
Larry, it's an honor to be with you. Thanks so much.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into the anti-nuclear weapons crusade or cause?
Well, it was my first job out of college. I graduated and wasn't quite sure where I was going to go. And through a set of circumstances that I'll spare you the details of, I wound up working for a retired U.S. senator in my home state of California. Who had dedicated his retirement to reducing nuclear dangers. And so that was the first thing I did in my adult career, and I've never really left it since.
Well, you're not only that, but you're also a Baptist pastor. So how does this work together in your life?
Well, I wasn't raised in the church. I wasn't raised a Christian, and I was just raised in sort of an irreligious family in Southern California. While I was working on this anti-nuclear cause as a young man, just graduated from college, I had an encounter with God that changed the direction of my life. I talk a little bit about this in the book, where I heard the voice of God calling me to evaluate my life and evaluate what I was doing, not by the standard of what I could accomplish, but by faithfulness to the one who had saved the world. And it took me, I may be a little bit of a slow learner. It took me a few years to kind of figure out what all that meant. But that experience changed the direction of my life. I wound up in seminary, dedicated myself to theological study, became a part of a Baptist church. That congregation then lifted me up, licensed me to preach, ordained me several years later. For the past 5-6 years or so, the two aspects of my adult life in terms of anti-nuclear work and work as a Christian minister have come quite consciously together in the work of the Two Futures Project, which is the organization I founded, and in my capacity at the World Evangelical Alliance, which is where I chair a nuclear weapons task force.
Well, I mean, though, this seems odd, and I'm speaking to you, of course, from the South.
Sure.
And from a conservative, a political background in which, you know, the idea of the nuclear activist, it might have been a liberal Methodist or Presbyterian or something like
right.
that. But to think of a Baptist being an anti-war activist is a little bit strange. How do you deal with the people who ask you about that or perhaps dismiss you because
well,
of that?
Well, you know, it's precisely that. That dissonance, that sort of the double take that motivated my work with the Two Futures Project, because I knew all the folks who in the anti-nuclear world, and very few of them were evangelicals like myself, and I knew the way that they talked And I could tell, you know, when they would try to make a point using a moral argument or a religious argument, it was just it just wasn't going to land with the types of people I went to church with. You know, I grew up in Southern California, but I've lived all over the place since. Spent 5 years in Nashville, and was at a Baptist church there. So I mean, this is an environment that I've got some familiarity with. And the way in which people talked about nuclear weapons, the way in which people talked about peace overall, I just knew it wasn't speaking to the heart of the evangelical people that were my brothers and sisters in the congregation. And so the Two Futures Project was quite consciously an effort to say, you know, is there a way to think about nuclear weapons, to think about larger questions of peace that rises out of evangelical commitments, instead of asking evangelicals to be somebody that they're not, or to respond to arguments and logic that don't speak to their core concerns. So what I tried to do with the organization, and it's not for me to say whether it succeeded or failed, but what the motivation was. Is there something that really rises up out of the soil of an evangelical faith that can make that can then be a genuine expression in terms of dealing with nuclear weapons? Now, I'm certainly not a pioneer in this regard. I would never claim that. There is a long lineage of evangelicals who I would look to from various walks, you know, not necessarily all Baptists, but from various walks who would be committed in this direction. John Stott, for example, an Anglican clergyman and an evangelical statesman, a real mentor to me in this regard, very fervently anti-nuclear in his ethics. And it's that line that I tried to continue in, but I felt that a case needed to be made, especially to a younger generation, and so that's what I started. That's what I started the organization in order to do.
And let's remind our audience that the organization is called the Two Futures Project, right? And you can access that. I believe it's what, twofuturesproject.com.
That would work, except that, as of this recording, our website is down for maintenance. So if people would like to go back at a later date and check us out, I would be most welcome. And you've got that right. Yeah.
Okay. Now let's kind of, though, why I read the book, and I want to talk about that for just a second, because the program is not intended to change people's minds about nuclear weapons, perhaps,
sure,
and then have them join the cause. But I discovered in reading through the book that you were actually dealing with the broader perspective of how do the things that we do involve ourselves in, whatever the cause is, what is the reason why many people will start enthusiastically and eventually end up burned out, disillusioned, walk away from it, and never perhaps even come back to it again and become cynical about causes? And how is it then, does this relate to all of us, since we are, as Christians, we are part of a great cause?
Sure.
And we don't want that to happen to us. So that's why I think you wrote the book, right? And let's talk about that. Why entitle a book, The World Is Not Ours to Save?
Well, I appreciate you raising that. And I do just want to note for the record for any of your listeners, you know, a lot of people who run organizations will write a book, and it's a promotional vehicle for their organization, et cetera. That's really not what this is. I mean, it comes out of my experience. It's a critique of my own experience and the ways in which I feel like I've made some missteps. But it's not really a book about nuclear weapons. It's a book about what it means to live out your faith in public, whether or not that, you know, if that means that you're talking about nuclear weapons, if that means you're talking about clean water or sex trafficking or creation care or you know, whatever the case may be, religious liberties, I mean, really, whatever it might be, where faith intersects with a broader public, that's what I'm trying to speak to. Because over the past, again, 5-6 years, my work trying to build evangelical support for reducing nuclear dangers has brought me into contact with a bunch of wonderful good-hearted believers who are working in any number of fields. And as I've watched and as I've seen what I really would describe as sort of the rise of a cause-centered Christianity, especially among younger people, I think anybody who pays attention to what the youth group at their church is occupied with, is thinking about, is going to be familiar to them. The sort of rise and a passionate concern about justice, for example, I think is maybe the most widespread example. That's who the book is for. Is for the person who thinks that what they believe in their heart of hearts should have an expression in their politics, in their what and how they consume, and how they live out their lives in front of their neighbors, in terms of maybe promoting a cause or an organization. And as you said, I think that one of my concerns, I think there's a lot to celebrate in what's happening these days. I think that the revival of justice as a gospel issue is something that should be wholeheartedly celebrated. But in that, I think we also run some risks, and I think there are some spiritual and practical pitfalls. I know because I've stuck my foot in most of them. What I'm concerned with is that we actually engage in living out our faith in public in a way that's sustainable, in a way that's true to the claims of the gospel, and in a way that doesn't pretend that we have more control over the world and of history than we actually do. And so the whole book is, in essence, trying to think through what was at the core of my conversion moment, which is this shift from am I effective to am I faithful?
Well, that, I think, in that statement, and believe it or not, Tyler, the first half of the program has actually flown by. And so we've got to come up to the break, but you've set it up perfectly, is all of us as believers, and that's who is mostly listening to this program today, are people who are concerned about faithfulness.
Yeah.
And that's what we really want to talk about. So I want you to stay tuned. We've got to take a 2-minute break here, and we're going to come back and talk about how the involvement in a cause is a reflection, not of the cause so much, but it is what it means to be a faithful believer, a disciple of Jesus. And that's where we'll pick up the conversation in 2 minutes when we get back, because this is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.